This is very, very cool. The Dudley Observatory in Schenectady has a great program coming up next week at the Proctor's GE Theater as part of their Skywatch lecture series. Just this past summer, the rover Curiosity landed on Mars. That project has ties to this region. Dr. Lori Leshin of RPI is an integral part of the project, and she'll present an insider's view of the mission and share some of the exciting results to date at 7:30 on Tuesday. That's a week from today at the Proctor's GE Theater. Dr. Lori Leshin is currently the Dean of the School of Science at RPI and will present Curiosity on Mars, Roving the Red Planet. Dr. Leshin was a senior executive at NASA and is currently a member of the instrument teams for the Mars Science Laboratory Curiosity Rover mission. A lot of words to put on a business card. Dr. Leshin, thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Also joining us is Janie Schwab, who's the executive director of the Dudley Observatory and here to talk about the great work that they do. Thank you very much for being with
us. Thank
you. Always a pleasure. Dr. Leshin, let us begin with you. When we think of this being a member of the instrument team, what is that? I mean, how many people are we taught? What is it? What kind of village does it take to put Curiosity on Mars?
Yeah, they say it takes a village to raise a child, and Curiosity is kind of like our baby on Mars right now. We're teaching it how to explore. So Curiosity actually has 10 science instruments on board, whether it's cameras or spectrometers and ways of sort of sniffing the air and understanding the rocks. And I'm involved in two of those 10 instruments. There are over 400 scientists involved in the science team on Curiosity.
Wow. And how do you work in concert with each other in the sense of, are you keenly aware of what is happening with the other 399 brilliant minds, or is it where you are obtaining data and then sharing it along the way? How does that work?
There's a little bit of both. So initially, the first 90 days after the rover landed, it landed in early August, and we all sort of converged on the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, to do our first 90 days of mission operations together. And the way it works is, you know, the rover's on Mars. Every day on Mars, the rover wakes up to do science, what science we tell it to do. So every day, we have to look at the data that came down from yesterday and plan what it's going to do today, and then send those commands up. So every day, a large team is working together to plan exactly what the rover's going to do today. And then, sort of on a longer term, we all are looking at the data that are coming back more sort of carefully, if you will, and doing our scientific investigations. So we did that all together for the first 90 days, and now we all do it from our home institutions. I was just online looking at stuff at RPI before I came over here.
Each day gives you what kind of information? I mean, in the sense of, it's you really never know what you're going to get, do you? Or do you have sort of an inkling?
So it's true exploration in many ways, and that's one of the things that's just so fascinating about it. And what I promise I'll do at the Dudley Observatory lecture next week is bring some hot off the presses stuff. So we'll bring some images or something that just had come down within the past couple of days. We do plan pretty carefully exactly what we want the rover to do each day, but we don't exactly know what we'll get in terms of, did it successfully achieve our goals every day? And, you know, if we're taking, say, a close-up picture of a new kind of rock, what's it going to look like? We don't know. And every day we're in awe of what we get.
How big is it?
It's about the size of a small car. It's about a one-ton beast. It is the largest, most complex roving vehicle we've ever sent to another planet. It's significantly bigger than Spirit and Opportunity, those two cute little rovers that have been driving around on Mars for 8 or 9 years that y'all probably know about. So it's got 10 times more scientific payload than any other rover we've ever sent to Mars.
And what is the frequency of things going wrong? I mean, in the sense of, I mean, look, our cars break down all the time. So,
right.
And we have the capacity to, you know, just drive them down to the shop and get them fixed. So how do you encounter that? And is that something that holds you up personally, or are you a part of the ultimate solution?
So what I would say is that one reason that space vehicles cost a lot to make is that they're made very well, and they're made to withstand all kinds of, you know, nasty things like launching on a big rocket that's very loud and very shaking and surviving 7 minutes of terror, the landing through the Mars atmosphere and landing on the surface. And then, yeah, as you said, we can't fix it when it breaks. So we have to, it has to be very smart. So it has a lot of redundant systems. So one thing breaks, by the way, we've got another one so that we can use that. Or the engineers, once it's on the surface of Mars, we're very conservative with it. You know, it's like a baby. You treat it very conservatively. We make sure that we're very careful with what we ask it to do. And it's smart enough to know that if it gets itself into trouble, it stops what it's doing and phones home.
What is the timetable? How long will it be doing what it's doing?
So the prime mission for Curiosity is one Mars year, which is not quite two Earth years. So about 1.9 Earth years. And but, you know, Spirit and Opportunity, their prime mission was 90 days and Spirit lasted 8 years and Opportunity is still going. I've just turned 9 years old. So I always say that it's going to last forever. You know, there's really almost no limit on the lifetime.
Well, because they don't leave there, right?
Nope.
They're up there. So whenever they can keep doing, they keep doing, right?
We now have a priceless asset on the surface of Mars. That's right. It's an extraordinarily capable vehicle and we're going to make it last as long as we possibly can.
Have those three crazy kids met each other?
No, they're spread out all over the planet. You know these kids. They're off exploring their own way.
Dr. Lori Leshin is the Dean of the School of Science at RPI and will present Curiosity on Mars, Roving the Red Planet. It's part of the Dudley Observatory's Skywatch lecture series. Janie Schwab is Executive Director of the Dudley Observatory. And I assume this is just for being an observatory and being what it is that you do and your mission, that this is just a gift to have this resource literally in your backyard.
This is a wonderful gift. And the Skywatch lecture series has been just a wonderful part of our mission. We've been able to bring world-class scientists, and not only do they present the cutting-edge science, but they've all been wonderful speakers, and they're able to present it in a way that people can understand. These lectures are aimed at the general public, and believe me, bring your children, and they will want to be scientists.
Hmm. And because it shows you the opportunity and what is possible, and I would assume the questions that are out there that need answering.
And people have always been fascinated by astronomy. It's in the news. It's flashy. The Hubble pictures are extraordinary. The work that's been going on with finding extrasolar planets and the work on Mars, it just so grabs your imagination, and people love it. Astronomy also has the benefit that it's one of very few sciences that lay people can actually contribute to. Amateurs can do research, and it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
So explore that with me for a moment about the research that we can do as an observatory, the Dudley Observatory. How can people engage in that and be a part of what you do?
Well, we have a few different programs. One is called DARC, Dudley Observatory Astrophotography Research Nights. And we had to spell nights with a K in order to get it to be DARC. But the idea of that is to...
Darn didn't work as
right,
well,
darn,
right?
Darn wasn't quite so attractive. So we hope to teach people astrophotography, which is a very basic astronomical technique, a very basic research technique. And then in conjunction with that, we have a research project that people can participate in. And we wanted to do something with light curves. Stars change their brightnesses. Planets that are passing in front of their star will eclipse them. There are all kinds of projects that cause brightnesses to change. And by monitoring these, you can find out a lot about what's out there. And so aside from this, there is so much data available. All the NASA stuff is in the public domain. There are a number of citizen science research projects that, you know, they're ongoing projects that you can just sign up and do work in a number of different fields. But even Mars, the Themis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Laurie can tell us more about that. There are a lot of these projects available.
Yeah.
So I'd say a couple of things. One is for Curiosity, of course, we've had a huge amount of public interest. So it's very easy for people to be involved at lots of different levels. First and foremost, every picture we get down from the rover goes straight to the internet. So you can literally, as we see them, the public can see them. If you just Google Curiosity raw images, it'll take you right to the website. You can look at any one of our 8 cameras on any given day. What are the new pictures that come down? It's fantastic. But there are also programs, especially in schools, where we had student groups at Arizona State University, where I was located before coming out east. that where students could propose a hypothesis and take an image of Mars to try to test it. And they could actually be the first people on the planet to see that picture of Mars from orbit when it came down and do their science with it. It's amazing. And we saw kids, were transformed by spending a week doing this kind of scientific research.
How do they do that? I mean, how is that physically possible?
It's funded by NASA through their education and public outreach programs. Every mission that NASA does has a set-aside budget for education and public engagement. And they've really been working towards projects that are aligned with the STEM standards, the science and technology standards, teaching standards in schools. And this is one where the kids get to actually do the research. I mean, for me, as a 19-year-old kid who was a summer intern at NASA, getting to do that hands-on research myself, for me, that was the lightning bolt. That's why I became a planetary scientist. So that these kids might be able to have that experience at such a young age is fantastic.
Well, just that name, Curiosity, tells you a lot, doesn't it? I mean that we are curious about what's going on.
You bet. And this was also named by a student, a young woman, who named it, I think, when she was about 10 years old. She just turned 16, and she's fantastic.
When you think about your role in all of this, Janie, I'm assuming a lot of your work is with students and kids and giving them that introduction to the science
yes.
and to astronomy.
I do a lot of work with kids and with teaching people how to use telescopes. Probably my specialty is taking people out that very first time they're using their new telescope. It's a very empowering thing, and I love it. You know, a big part of my goal is to make science part of everyday life. And if we want our kids to go into science, we have to show them that these things are fascinating and that scientists are real people with real lives, and that it's not just wearing the lab coat and following the instructions and getting the right answer. You know, curiosity really sums it up. You always start an experiment by asking a question.
Mm.
And
yeah, I agree with that.
Let me, I just went to the website and the raw images, and there's an image here that was taken today, and it is taken by the front HazCam.
Yeah.
From the left.
Okay.
And there it is, and again, anybody can go and look at that. But it's a picture, and it's partially, you see equipment, and then you see the craggly planet that it's on. It's a sort of a black, white, and gray image. What do you as a scientist take from that? What should we as lay people take from that?
So this is a great picture. This is our hazard cameras. These are the cameras that, as the rover drives along, are the things that help it not run into something big, some big obstacle. So it looks sort of fisheye lens, and that's on purpose because it's
right.
got a wide view. What you see in this picture, you see our robotic arm that we extend out. It's a 200-pound arm with all kinds of sensors on the end of it, and a scoop and a drill and a brush that we can use to sort of access rocks. And right now we're sitting our odometer only has about 500 meters on it right now, maybe 5 football fields a length that we've driven since August. But we are now sitting in the lowest part of the local region of this crater that we're sitting in. And if water was going to flow somewhere, it's going to pond in the lowest part, right? So we're actually sitting in these rocks, and there's actually a press conference at NASA in an hour and 15 minutes to talk about our latest results from sitting down here. But they're going to talk about the fact that we're seeing a lot of really interesting features in these rocks, which people can see if they go and poke around at these raw images. You can see white veins shooting through these rocks that are probably minerals that formed from water flowing through. And so it's just a fantastic place, and we're about to put our drill down for the first time and drill into these rocks.
And I'm curious, I'm fascinated by the idea of the odometer.
Yeah.
Because it isn't very far. So is there any benefit to going fast in the sense of, do you learn anything from that exercise, or do you have to go low and slow, as it were?
So we've gone low and slow at first. Again, think of the curiosity like a baby. We're kind of learning to crawl before
sure.
we walk, before we run. And so we decided to kind of explore our local area here so we can check out all our instruments and make sure everything's working. But then we're going to start heading at a pretty good clip up to the mountain that's in our backyard that we landed right next to, that's got beautiful layers in it. It's about 6 kilometers away from us. And so it's going to probably take us a few months to get there. We drive slow because it's, again, the way to keep our priceless assets safe on the surface of Mars. We would only drive maybe 50 or 100 meters a day. But we haven't even been driving that much since we've landed. We've been going in sort of smaller increments. But we are letting the rocks and the science drive us. We want to understand whether or not there was water at the site, whether or not it was habitable, whether or not life could have gotten started there. And so we've got to let the rocks guide us.
Is there ever that point where you just look at each other and go, let's take this sucker for a ride? Let's see what we got here.
Wheelies, anyone? Oh, I think we all, we look at
I know
that.
You're all professionals, but you know, as to what the gut impulse may be.
Well, what we mostly do is we look at that mountain off in the distance and say, boy, we really want to get there.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like, we got it. We want to do great stuff here and there's great rocks right at our feet, but we all are really anxious to kind of take the road trip. And you know, it's the, our lead scientist sort of says he's got 400 scientists in the back seat saying, are we there yet?
and then I assume that's what gets you out of bed in the morning, because you have that to look forward to in getting to that, making that journey.
Well, certainly. I mean, I'm the dean of the School of Science at RPI, which also gets me out of bed in the morning. Yeah. It's a phenomenal place to work, and to be able to lead an amazing group of faculty and students in science is fantastic as well. But certainly knowing that you've got, you know, brand new pictures from Mars waiting for you is a pretty exciting thing to get up for.
Is this the future of the science program? I mean, of the space program? I mean, is this has this what it is now?
I think this is the nice thing to be about Mars is it really does bring together the robotic side of NASA, which has been our traditional way of exploring Mars, but also the human exploration side of NASA. NASA is really transitioning away from NASA vehicles sending up and down to low Earth orbit. We've retired the space shuttles.
Right.
But we're building the next generation of vehicles to take humans beyond low Earth orbit, to go to places like Mars. And Curiosity actually carries on board a radiation sensor, which one of the most dangerous things about sending humans beyond Earth is the radiation environment. We didn't know what that radiation environment was like at the surface of Mars. You know, we're kind of protected on the Earth by our magnetic field. Mars doesn't have a magnetic field. What's the radiation like? It turns out that it's not much worse than being up on the space station. So that's a really nice result to say that, look, we think we can build vehicles that will keep humans safe on the surface of Mars. And so in that way, even Curiosity is helping advance human exploration. So I think the two are going to continue to play together.
For the average person who will be attending the lecture, who is listening to us speak this morning, what do you think we get out of this information, that just sort of the day-to-day of having this vehicle up on Mars and rolling around?
So I would say two things. I mean, first I would say that the discoveries that we're making give us perspective on life on our planet, on who we are and how we got here. Understanding whether or not life got started anywhere else is, frankly, I think the most exciting question that scientists can ask.
Sure.
And so Curiosity is right in that game, expanding our knowledge about that. The second thing I would say that we get out of it is, you know, this rover costs $2.5 billion, you know, cost of a movie ticket per person in the U.S. So so that's kind of puts it in perspective. It sounds like a lot, but, you know, basically everybody goes out and buys a movie ticket. That's the cost of building a rover on Mars. But that's not money we strap on top of a rocket and launch into space. That's money that's spent right here in America on good high-tech jobs, the kind of jobs that we want American, you know, we want people in our country to have, the kinds of things that we want our students to aspire to be doing. And so to me, again, that's a very positive, you know, innovation, high-tech injection into our economy.
At what point is there a point where your two worlds collide, in the sense of the work that you do with NASA is that you bring students into that at RPI and get them involved in that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have some funding to bring some students, to get some students involved. I've done a couple of lectures so far and may teach a class, and we're just sort of getting started with that. I wanted to make sure that we sort of survived and landed safely before I got a bunch of students involved. I've also been involved in missions where we didn't land safely, and this is much more fun.
Yeah, I bet it is.
It beats crashing.
and then you start from scratch at that point, don't you? Or
if you crash, you
yeah.
Mean? We did. This was, about 15 years ago, the Mars Polar Lander. I was actually live on CNN when we crashed.
Wow.
It was not fun.
Man.
Yeah.
So, Janie, we have this program that's coming up a week from tonight. It's at Proctor's at the GE Theater, 7:30, and you hope people get what out of it?
Oh, people are going to be fascinated. You can actually come at 6:30. Delphine Tseng will be bringing a lot of Legos so people can get an idea of what the rover looks like ahead of time and what some of the features of it are. Then we'll have the talk. Afterwards, there's a reception so people can ask Laurie even more questions. And it's going to be the latest news from Mars.
Mm. And when we talk about the latest news of Mars, I mean, will it be dramatically different next week than it will be for this week? I mean, is that how that works?
Who knows? It could be. Well, you know, every time they have a press conference like they are, and again in about an hour, they publicly release, you know, all the raw images are there on the web, but then they publicly release some sort of nicer, refined
what
images
means,
where they
yeah.
take and with more interpretation. And so, so there's always new stuff to talk about. And by next week, hopefully, we'll be sitting at our drill site. And so we can kind of give people an update on our drilling progress. And so, yeah, who knows what we're going to find? That's the beauty of exploration.
In the drill, how far will you be going down?
Oh, it's not very far. It's only a few inches in.
Okay.
So it's just to try to sample the rock itself. So the, you know, on Earth, if you want to preserve ancient evidence of life, the best place to do that is in a rock. And you've got to kind of get away from the surface layers, but kind of get into a bit more of the interior. So we're going to drill in and powder up some rock and stick it in the belly of the rover into a couple of instruments that can analyze it and look for water and look for organic materials. And that won't be done by next week. We won't have ingested the drill stuff, but hopefully we'll be starting in our drilling campaign.
Is it how much, and you have to respect the place that you're at, right?
You bet. Absolutely. So you have to protect it. So one of the things we've had to do is make sure our rover's pretty clean.
Yeah.
Last thing we'd want if there were little critters on Mars would be to contaminate them with a bunch of, you know, Earth stuff. And similarly, if and when we're able to bring materials back from Mars, we'll have to make sure those things are safely contained as well. So there's actually a person at NASA whose job title is Planetary Protection Officer. I think it's probably one of the coolest job titles in the world.
It is.
And her job is to actually make sure that we don't contaminate other worlds and that we don't let other worlds contaminate us. So she's very serious about that and does an excellent job.
It's fascinating stuff. The lecture is Curiosity on Mars, Roving the Red Planet. Dr. Laurie Leshin will be speaking. It's Tuesday night, a week from tonight, 7:30 at Proctor's GE Theater in Schenectady. And you can find out more information by going to dudleyobservatory.org, dudleyobservatory.org. And Dr. Leshin and Janie, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure. And have a wonderful event. It sounds fascinating.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Again, you can find out more information by going to dudleyobservatory.org, dudleyobservatory.org. Curiosity on Mars, Roving the Red Planet at 7:30 Tuesday night, January 22nd at the Proctor's GE Theater. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.